Holy God, open our eyes to your presence, open our ears to your call, open our hearts to your love. Amen. Please be seated. We are in the season of graduations. Universities have wrapped up the academic year and high schools aren't far behind. In fact, I think most high school seniors checked out sometime last January. There is nothing left but the last lectures and the commencement addresses. And that is what we have stumbled into in John's Gospel today. And I have two different perspectives on that, one as a priest and one as a parent. From my priestly pulpit view, we are eavesdropping on Jesus' final discourse or last lecture with his disciples. And what we are witnessing in this text is the patient teacher encouraging the worried students. Relax. Don't let your hearts be troubled. It's going to be okay. But the disciples are worried for their futures. They aren't ready to graduate. We can't relax. We don't know how. All we know is school. We don't know another way. And even if we did manage into the right path, we won't know it's the right path because we don't know the Father. Show us the Father, Jesus. Show us what success looks like. Teach us how to win. The students are very anxious. The disciples are a mess. The disciples were always a mess. Jesus didn't recruit the best of the best for his little private school. He recruited the full range of humanity, the stubborn, the jealous, the ambitious, the doubters, the betrayers, the deniers, and the fearful. The fact that Jesus recruited at all went against the education system of the day, and it goes against ours today as well. The way that discipleship schools were formed is that eager students would approach potential teachers and try to impress them with their knowledge and outstanding skills because the competition was tough. Pick me, Rabbi. Look at my test scores. I play several instruments, speak two languages fluently, and only took advanced placement classes. I have meddled in my sport, and I fed the homeless every third Saturday for civics credit one semester. Pick me. Yes, just like education today, these wandering rabbinic schools were extremely competitive. But Jesus ignored all of that and called the ones who not only weren't special, but they weren't even trying to get into school. They weren't applying. And Jesus is still calling and inviting us to follow him. But we've convinced ourselves and our children that discipleship isn't the school of choice. Even though Jesus clearly states today that it is the only choice. I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, some Christians like to interpret that statement as an excuse to proselytize to other faith traditions. Convert the Jews, the Muslims, the heathens, the heretics. It's for their own good. It's their only hope. But from my pulpit perspective, I don't worry about those who believe differently from us. Good Trinitarian theology actually allows for several entry points to God. So I don't have to obsess about this one little sentence in John's Gospel. Besides, Jesus wasn't even talking to or about the Gentiles here. He was talking to his disciples, to the future church, and to any current Christian who thinks Christianity is a religion of convenience. Because there is nothing convenient about Jesus. Going through him, as this text suggests, means living as he lived, loving as he loved, and quite possibly even dying as he died. Going through Jesus means that he is completely in our way. We can't ignore him, step over him, or walk around him. We must pass through the very heart of him. And once we are on the other side of this total immersion, becoming one body through Christ's body and blood experience, our vision will be changed. Everything, everything will be reflected through the light of Christ. We will see what God sees, and it is glorious. How else can we explain what happens to Stephen in today's reading from Acts? How was he able to look up and not focus on the angry mob which encircled him, fists clenched with a rock inside? How was he able to see the glory of God in that, if not for his being able to see things through Jesus? How else can we explain any of the transformations that take place with the disciples? The disciples were a mess, remember? They were not by any stretch of the imagination the best of the best. They weren't ready to be on their own. They couldn't stay awake in the garden. They couldn't refrain from violence when Jesus was arrested. They couldn't admit being affiliated with him at his trial. They couldn't bear to be at his crucifixion. And after his death, all locked up and hidden, they just couldn't believe the women who had seen the resurrected Jesus until they had seen him for themselves. When did things change for them? How did that happen? I like to say that the real miracle of Easter was not the raising of the dead, but the transformation of the living. And that didn't happen, it couldn't happen, until Jesus left the disciples on their own. It took some time, but by the time of the ascension, they all believed, just as Jesus told them they would. They believed and they could see the glorious vision, even as they were about to be stoned. Now, this is the point in our faith story where my priestly perspective comes into direct conflict with my parental one. My husband and I have 4 children, 3 boys and a girl. 2 of the boys are in college, 1 is in high school, and our daughter is in middle school. And just like most mothers, I will do anything to protect them from getting stones thrown at them. I will do my darndest to keep them out of situations where stones even exist, let alone get used as weapons. I want the best for my kids. And a mother's love is a fierce, don't be getting in my way kind of love, right? Forget everything I said earlier about competition. We live where we live because of the schools. My kids had excellent test scores. They speak second languages, play instruments as well as sports, and they are graduating from college early because of all their AP credits. And as much as I would like to take credit for making this happen, I can't. The only thing my husband and I can honestly feel remotely good about is that we did things kind of old school. We have always made God a priority in their lives. And when we got out of the way and let the success come through Jesus, not us. You see, even as an uber vigilant mother, and my kids are here today and they'll tell you this is true, and uber vigilant is the nice way of putting it, I am not really in control of much of anything. I can't stop the teasing that happens, the heartbreaks, the betrayals and friendships, the illnesses or the injuries. I can't prevent the death that surrounds us. We live in a world of stone throwers. We pretend that we have control over what happens to our kids by scheduling this kind of hell out of their lives and carefully crafting out their experiences in hopes that they will always feel happy and successful. Our own experiences as parents tell us, however, that this is an unachievable goal. All of our extracurricular good intentions will not spare our children pain. We cannot stop our kids from ever getting hurt any more than we can stop time. But we can strengthen their relationship with the one who loves unconditionally and the one who is always present, even when we cannot be. So today at St. Michael's, we are celebrating one of the easiest and most significant ways we can encourage our children to have a relationship with God through our church camps. Church camping programs contribute a lot to a child's faith formation. They foster a respect of self as a unique child of God while emphasizing the importance of Christian community. In their communal life, be it day camp or sleepaway camp, kids maintain a daily ritual of prayer and praise and experiencing God through nature and play, which they are doing right now in the parish hall. What blossoms out of these shared experiences are things like deep friendships and a musical soundtrack of hope that the kids carry with them. Most importantly, however, is the shift in thinking that can develop. Church and God are no longer things that happen to a child. Rather, they are relationships initiated and nurtured by the child themselves. Developing a sense of responsibility towards one's own spiritual life, coupled with a commitment to a community, is huge. It is not surprising that kids who regularly participate in church camping programs become leaders in the church. Our camps facilitate the transformation of the living to see resurrection in the midst of a stone-throwing world. That is, in fact, the point of Jesus' final discourse and the miracle that is Easter. Amen.